if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 189. We move from Mexico and Portugal to Texas and Dubai for this week's show. The PGA Tour plays the Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Houston Open, with the European Tour enjoying its first of 2 weeks in Dubai. They play the Aviv Dubai Championship. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's golf betting action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, chaps.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics, and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge. There is no paywall. On Twitter, you can get Barry at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Please subscribe and like the shows. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Of course, we're getting closer and closer to Christmas, so if you could drop a few 5-star reviews as Christmas presents for the podcast, we'd much appreciate it. This is this week's, and it's from the Langasque Fan Club. Romain Langasque Fan Club, 5-star review is the title. It is 5 stars. We listened to the BMW preview last month. First time listeners to the podcast for a few betting tips. Then bumped into you guys at Wentworth on the Friday on the 10th hole, just as Romain Langasque knocked in a hole in one. You have gained a few new followers, listeners since. Loving the detail behind your picks and obvious love for the sport. Let's hope one day Big Romain gets tipped up. We will all be in. Keep up the good work. That's from Craig, Mark, Aggie, Josh and C. Rob, the Langasque Fan Club. Thank you very much, boys.
Yeah, thanks, chaps. Yeah, it was great to catch up and have a chat with you guys on the 10th. And to see a live ace was pretty special, Steve, wasn't it? It was the first one I've seen. To be there to witness it was really good. So thanks for the review. Very much appreciated as ever.
What do you reckon, Romain's? What's his MO in your opinion as a follower of the European Tour? What kind of? I suppose he's French. It's difficult to tell, isn't it? he could be going fishing for all we know, and then he turns up.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
8 miscuts, and then they win. It's typically Gallic, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure he's quite a Victor Dubuisson
Dubuisson.
Yeah, he struggles to make it past round one when he does choose to turn up. But
Romain going to contend? What kind of courses does he contend on?
I'm not. I can't remember having put him up much at all recently. I mean, generally, I'd put him down as more of a precise type, but it doesn't tend to be one he pops to the top of my thought process. Perhaps having witnessed a bit of magic live, I should review that next time we're on a tree line test. Perhaps that's where it brings the competitive juices flowing for Romain Langasque. But one to keep an eye on is a talented boy. They all are, aren't they? You know, on their day, they're all capable. It's just picking the right weeks for these chaps.
Should we talk about last week? What happened? What happened in Portugal? It was a good, my lord. a rarely spotted Thomas Peters at ridiculously short odds victory.
Yeah, he was. I was impressed with him down the stretch, though. You know, it's been a while since he'd won, and the European Tour hot potato Sundays are usually pretty commonplace. And well, to be fair, Matthew Pavon did have it in his grasp and did let it slip. But yeah, coming down the last few holes, Thomas Peters was good. He made a decent par save on the 16th, maybe from 10 feet or so. Decent birdie on the par five and managed to nail a 20-footer or so on the last to secure a 2-stroke victory. I mean, it still wasn't assured with the final putts to be made on the final hole with Peters outside of Pavon to secure the title. But no, he did it with aplomb. And what, 25-1? I can look past him given his strike rate of late at that kind of price, but fundamentally he's a very, very strong player. He's at his best, is well inside the top 50 in the world in terms of capability and ability. Full stop. Just doesn't always pull it out with any consistency. But yeah, that is. Well done to him, mate. He was chalked up to be playing again this week, but he's given it a miss, which does take a bit of a dilemma out of the week because he has gone back-to-back, albeit with a week in between, back in the past. So maybe one to keep an eye on next week, maybe.
He's jumped up to 74th from 129 in the world rankings with that victory.
There you go.
The sort that you would like on your side in a... Ryder Cup kind of stage at Bethpage Black, somewhere like that. Some, you know, one of those great big, crazily long Parkland classical golf courses that they like to hold the Ryder Cup on.
Yeah, and he seems to have sorted out his temperament a little bit of late. You know, there's times gone past when we've seen very angry Thomas Peters, but seems to have. A little on that to a certain degree. Seems to be striking the ball better, and you know, with that, the rest of his game can fall in place. One to watch. I mean, he's not one that jumps to the top of my thought process because he often does flatter to deceive, and he often gets away to decent starts in tournaments, and drifts away from contending positions, and you know, often ranks as the favourite in these kind of fields or the kind of field that we saw last week, and doesn't convert, but yeah, it was his week last week, so well done to him, and well done to any Thomas Peters backers who kept the faith over the last couple of years.
Over in the States last week, they had the Korn Ferry Tour qualifying tournament, and in T2 was one Vincent Norman, who's been playing some excellent stuff on the European Tour this year. So he's now got his Korn Ferry card for next season.
That's very good. Again, he's a very modern style golfer, a very long...
You put him up in a tournament, I can remember.
Yeah, but I've packed him a couple of times, actually. But yeah, he's one of these modern style golfers. He's very long off the tee. He's a great putter. And when those kind of players put a decent approach game or approach week together... they can be really, really dangerous. And you'd have thought that PGA Tour, he may get the odd start, I guess. Certainly the Korn Ferry Tour, you'd have thought those kind of courses are going to suit him really quite nicely. So, yes, one to watch for next year, definitely.
I'm just trying to look for some names there that I recognise. Will Gordon, Scott Harrington, they were playing PGA Tour last week. Blaine Barber, there's an old name. He's got his card for the Korn Ferry next year. Chris Baker, the birdie maker. He managed to get a top 14 finish. Thomas Rosenmüller, he's German. Has he played PGA? Has he played European Tour? Rosenmüller.
Not that I recall of any day. No. He might have played a couple of the German tournaments, I guess. But it doesn't. Not to any great degree that I can recall.
Brandon Stone, and Jason Scribner were in that and didn't get Korn Ferry cards.
Back to the European Tour for those boys, then.
Yeah. Just shows you. And MJ Daffy. Daffy? Is it Daffy?
Duffy.
Yeah.
Duffy.
Yeah, he missed out by... he was tied 50th, so... Yeah, there's a few there. We had two sure price winners last week with Peters. We also had Victor. Victor Hovland defended his Mayakoba title. So that's three PGA Tour victories now for Victor. All on Paspalum greens and all in tropical conditions. Interesting.
Yeah, he's sort of telegraphing his preferred style of tournament and course, isn't he? Can't play out on those kind of conditions every day of the week, and there's not many Paspalum courses out there on the either of the tours, really. Just the odd one dotted here and there, but he certainly seems to enjoy the surface and can compile a score when he gets presented with those kind of greens, that's for sure.
Here's a Victor Hovland victory set of numbers for you, yes? Bearing in mind, as we talked last week, he's that ultimate plotter, isn't he? He's eighth for driving distance, second for fairways hit. So let me get this straight. Long, straight. He was fifth for greens in regulation and was in the top 10 for putts per round. He's gonna win.
That combination kind of works, doesn't it?
But yes, dominated, really. I think he was... It was interesting to see Thomas up there, but Thomas, again, I keep saying it, this Achilles heel, 25 of 56 fairways, he only hit 44.6% of them. And that's going to just bring doubles and bogeys along with it across a length of a 72-hole golf tournament. And when you're shooting 23 under, we also said that last week, it was likely to be a record-winning score, and he beat Kuchar's record by one shot, 23 under for Hovland. And it was kind of over within the front nine. He was, I think, at 1.5 clear, and they hadn't even made it to the turn. It reminded me of Sungjae Im's win a few weeks ago in Las Vegas. He did the same thing, didn't he? Just took control and had a 4-5 shot cushion going down the back nine.
Yeah, and just keep everyone at arm's length, and there's no stress then, is there? There's no worry that someone's going to come along and pip you on the last if you're three or four shots ahead all the way down the stretch. Nice if you're the player, if you've backed a player, that kind of ease, takes a lot of the stress out of a Sunday afternoon or evening if you're there.
Just to paint the full picture, Hovland was fifth for scrambling and fourth for putting average.
That kind of works.
I had, it was an interesting tournament. I think my MO for selections was there or thereabouts. I had Henley tying for second on Friday, getting to the turn on his round. I'm thinking, oh yeah, Henley. And then he proceeded to, he started to struggle on a Friday, double bogey, bogey. You think, oh, Russell. You have said to me, over the years, Barry, that he's so plastic, it's unbelievable, Russell Henley. Anyway, before I knew it, he was almost at the bottom of the leaderboard come Saturday. So it was a certain turn of fortunes for Russell Henley, but he's still up at his usual 45-1 this week.
Well, plastic implies something a bit different. I mean, I think he's a bit fragile when it comes to the heat of the battle. Yeah.
On a Friday. It's worrying when it's on a Friday, isn't it?
Yeah. It's intense. I mean, you're only 37, 38 to 40 holes away from victory, you know?
Yeah, and all of a sudden there's doubles on holes that people are birding.
He's been on the do not... But I think I backed him once this year. It looked really obvious. But he quickly got... He jumped off the X list for a week. He got a vacation off it for a week and then went right back on it. So, yeah, he's just on the do not back list. Too much emotional pain.
I do have an announcement. He's now on my never back again post-it note.
Is that the one where Paul Casey sits?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know that. You just say that for effect, Barry.
I know, but...
Of course, Paul Casey sits at the top of the list.
But you've let Paul Casey go on a lot of vacations off that list.
There's an asterisk by it that says Paul Casey majors, isn't it?
Yeah, there's an asterisk below it that says that on the odd occasion when you're feeling crazy,
you can include
them in your tips. But yes, he's on the same list as Paul Casey. But I had three T10 going into Sunday. I had James Harm at 200-1. I had Wacky Neiman. And who was the other one I had? Oh, Seamus Power, of course. So I'm thinking, oh, okay, you know, we get a couple of good rounds here. We might. But in the back of my mind, I was really thinking, I guarantee they all cock up and I end up with nothing. So it was nice to see Joaquin actually put in a decent Sunday round and get a full each way payout of 52 odds. So congrats to Joaquin for that. But yes, I think my reasoning was okay. I had people in contention, but Victor just absolutely walked away with it. And you've got to say one thing also, Carlos Ortiz defends this week, his first maiden title that he won in Houston 2020. But you've got to say with Ortiz, when he plays at home at Mayakoba, that guy copes with the pressure admirably, doesn't he? It seems to inspire him because his results at that tournament have been fabulous over the years. And if I remember correctly, going back to Carlos Ortiz, I think one of his Corn Ferry, it was called the web.com there, one of his victories was actually at the Mexico Championship. So very, very inspired when he goes home, Carlos Ortiz. So fair play to him, because a lot of these players play their home opens or home events and totally collapse. Ortiz isn't one of those, but interesting to see that Ortiz is shorter this week than Patrick Reed in the betting for the Houston Open.
Yeah, there's a few that are getting prohibitively short, aren't they?
Yeah, that's a bit of a strange one. Patrick Reed is a longer price than Carlos Ortiz. Right, we need to crack on. Let's talk, Paul, Aviv, Dubai Championship.
Yes. Yeah, the final stretch now, isn't it, for the European Tour. A doubleheader in Dubai to complete the 2021 season. And, well, right now it's all about the Race to Dubai rankings. Getting to the top 50, top 50 or thereabouts, it looks like, from commentary last week, it looks like maybe 54th or 55th, something like that, might make it through, because it sounds like they're going to pick the top 50 available rather than a hard and fast top 50 only from the Race to Dubai to make it through to the Earth course next week. So you've got top 50 or thereabouts to contend with. You also got the top 122 or thereabouts that will retain their full playing rights for next year. There's some complications with it. Of course, COVID's had an impact with all of this, and there's been announcements about a safety net for people who've got an existing card and they won't completely fall out of their playing rights, but they'll effectively sit below players who do qualify for a full retained card in this top 122 by rights. So it's still well within a player's interest to make sure that they're in this, in the right side of the line, effectively going out of this week's event. So lots to play for. We're at the Fire Course, which is next door to the Earth Course, which we're playing next week. The field of 114 is headed by, joint favourites, actually. Paul Casey, Tommy Fleetwood, both at 11-1 best price. Bernd Wiesberger, 18-1. Matt Wallace, 22s. Then we're into the likes of Minwoo Lee, 25-1. Dean Burmester, 28-1. Thomas Detry, Rafa Cabral Bayo, both 33. Sam Horsfield, 35-1. And then 40-1, bar those players that I've just read through. Worth noting this week, Boyle Sports are attacking this event. They're attacking the event that you're covering as well, Steve. I have got 8 places each way at a fifth of the odds at the Aviv Dubai Championship. They're also for golf betting system punters. There's a link on our website for an exclusive bet 10, get £30 in free bets offer, which is running for this week and next week only. So if you do fancy having a Boyle Sports account as part of your betting armory, which, given that they keep pushing these each way places out, so eight this week on the European Tour and 10 on the PGA Tour, well worth having. Pop along to the site. Of course, full T's and C's apply, but that's a bet 10, get £30 in free bets offer, which is running just for us and just for the next couple of weeks only. So be sure to take advantage of that if you fancy that account. Well, onto the Fire Course then. It's the sister course to next week's Earth Course, which we're far more familiar with. It's constructed from the same building blocks fundamentally as the Earth Course. The same grass is shared between the two courses. Similar kind of length, maybe a little bit shorter, 7,480-yard par 72, Bermuda greens. I mean, the fundamental difference between the two courses is that the fire course here this week sits on the edge of the estate. It's a little bit more exposed to the elements, and it was designed really to have a bit more of a links-like feel to it. So aesthetically, there are some links-y kind of features to it. Don't call it links. It's not going to be called, it's not going to be classed as a links, but there are some features that you may recognise that look a little bit links-y. And you sometimes get that with these desert courses as well, don't you? That's, that have the kind of wispy grass or, you know, very exposed anyway. And if the wind gets up, they can lend themselves to players who tend to play well by the coast or on links style tracks anyway. But fundamentally, it's very scorable. You've got four par fives that present real birdie and eagle chances to the players. You've also got a couple of short par fours that the bombers can really attack as well. And looking at the weather forecast, there's nothing in the forecast to suggest that this won't be another birdie fest. I mean, we're looking at mid-80s Fahrenheit temperatures, maybe 5 to 10 mile an hour winds. You sometimes get it pick up a little bit more in the afternoon around these parts. And this is a little bit more exposed, this course. But even so, I'm expecting some serious, serious red numbers. And you've got last. We've only got last year to dig into, but if you look at last year, it kind of brings it into context, really. The top five, Antoine Rosner won at 25 under par. He was a 60-1 shot. And then you had four players tied for second place, all shot 23 under par. Mark Lorenzo Vera, Francesco Laporta, Matt Wallace and Andy Sullivan all shot 23 under par. So some serious red numbers. From memory, Andy Sullivan shot off into a strong lead. I think he shot something like 61 on the first day and looked very much the winner for three rounds before finally the flat stick started to just not be as compliant as it needed to be when you're making that kind of score, when you need to make that kind of score. But yeah, I'm expecting something similar. You know, low to mid-20s under par, that means a lot of birdies. What a conversion of maybe one in three holes you need to be. Need to be finding birdies and making as few bogeys as possible. If you dig through the stats, and I've done a little bit of analysis on the preview, so you can read through that to your heart's content over on the Golf Betting System website. And I've dug into the top five finishers and how they finished in terms of traditional stats and strokes gained stats and their par 3, 4, 5 splits, that kind of stuff. So you can have a real delve through it if you fancy. Fancy trying to pick the bones out of last year's performance. I mean, I'd summarise it as saying that fairways, they were pretty easy to find. 60% or more accuracy was pretty commonplace. Even from the most flagrant of players, 60%, 65% driving accuracy was pretty common. Scrambling stats were high. Again, typically 70, 80, often in the 90% bracket for scrambling stats. So the challenge around the greens isn't massive, but you've got to keep your card as clean as you possibly can. You can't be making 10 bogeys and still expect to get to 25 under par, really. So, bogey avoidance, you know, accuracy not such an issue. Antoine Rosner, he led the field for driving distance, so that gives you an idea of the kind of course we're talking about here. You need to be attacking. Rosner was also first for strokes gained off the tee, second for strokes gained tee to green. So he did the damage with the long sticks. Andy Sullivan was second for strokes gained approach. So his irons were the strongest part of his game. Laporta was similar to Rosner, fourth for strokes gained off the tee, sixth for strokes gained tee to green. And Wallace was a bit more balanced, really. He was sixth for strokes gained approach and fifth for strokes gained putting. Lorenzo Vera was first for strokes gained putting, so I think I've covered all of the different combinations off there. In short, you need to excel at something and really put a good 4 days together, yeah. Whether that's off the tee or with your approach shots or with your putting. But in that one or two particular categories, you're really going to have to go hell for leather to get to that kind of number. Okay, digging through the course, the only thing that really stood out to me was par 3 scoring. And par 4s and par 5s were easy. The players were absolutely annihilating some of those holes. Rosner was 13 under for the par 5s. Laporta was 12 under. Lorenzo Vera was 13 under. In terms of the par fours, Matt Wallace was 13 under, Andy Sullivan was 12 under. So scoring on the fours and fives has got to be a prerequisite, really. For the par threes, the field combined were 149 over par for the 4 days. So you've got a real disparity between the par fours, par fives, and the difficulty of the par threes. So, yeah, maybe players.
That's crazy.
It's a huge disparity. I mean, players who can,
you rarely see that.
No, if you can hold your own, you know, hover around level par for the par threes, and then really make hay in the fours and fives, then that seems to be the kind of combination that's going to get the job done this week. But yeah, as I say, there's a kind of a deep dive into the top five and all of those different stats on the preview. So do pop along and have a read if that kind of thing interests you. Anyway, falling out of all of that, I've backed four players and I've left the very top of the market alone. I've left Paul Casey alone. I've left Tommy Fleetwood alone. I mean, for me, those players have got a bigger eye on next week. This is probably just a tool sharpening exercise. And I'm not saying if they get in position, they don't win. Of course they could. But both of them have got to shoot something like 25 under par to win, which is not really what we come to expect of either of those guys. And I think the bigger prize, undeniably next week. So I've looked a little bit further down. I've started with Minwoo Lee. I've got a little bit 28s yesterday. He's 25-1 currently. I still think that's a great price for a player of his quality. It's been a fantastic year for the talented young Aussie as well, hasn't it? He's sixth now in the race to Dubai, and he's done that the hard way. You look at a lot of those players in the top 10 of the race to Dubai, they've got their points by performing well in the majors or the WGCs. Not Minwoo Lee. The other player who's got there by the hard way, effectively, was Richard Bland, who's in the top 10 as well. But Minwoo Lee, again, he won the Scottish Open at Rolex Series level. A few months back, he shot 65, 64 over the weekend, so he can go low when he gets the chance. He was second at Valderrama recently, which I really don't think fits, so that gives us an idea of how well he's striking the ball. He was eighth last week in Portugal as well. And this kind of exposed track, that's exactly his game. I mean, we've already seen him proving his worth on Lynx-style seaside tracks. He also won the Vic Open along as well as that Scottish Open victory. And then over time, I'm sure we'll see him rack up lots of form, lots of wins potentially in the desert. He's got a little bit of desert form, fourth at the Saudi International last year. It's a good pointer, I think. I think he can keep the flag flying for the Australians after Lucas Herbert won a week or so ago now and over on the PGA Tour. I think he's going to be motivated to keep himself right up there in the race to Dubai at a general 25-1 now. So Minwoo Lee's in. I've also backed Dean Burmester. Again, he was early 33s-1. There's still some 28s out there. And again, I still think that's well worth taking that kind of price. And I had him in mind for this before he won the South African PGA Championship over the weekend on the Sunshine Tour. And I'll stick to my guns. How often does that happen? You start doing some pre-analysis at the back end of the week before and some guys really stick out and they're just praying they don't go and snare some decent finish or a low-grade win. And that's exactly what he did. But
Paul, how often have we also seen George Coetzee and Brandon Grace win in South Africa and then come on the European Tour and win the following outing?
Yeah, it happens a lot. Yeah, it does happen. And
as Bezuidenhout done that as well. I'm sure Bezuidenhout's done that as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, there's a few, and you're right, Coetzee is a great example, and Brandon Grace has done it literally back-to-back weeks as well, as you said. So, yeah, I didn't let it put me off. I mean, it did raise a question for me, I must say, and I did go back and rethink as to whether it was the right thing to do, because it's put a lid on his price to a certain degree. And the flip side, of course, is to say, well, he's scoring really well. His confidence has got to be high. And there's a quote I've put in my preview as well about how he wants to push on, use this as a springboard to help look after his family, financially, I guess. He's up to a career best now of 86th in the world rankings. And given he enjoys playing in the desert so much, he's got two desert events here this week and next. And at 86th, it's not out of the realms of possibility that he can be getting close to the top 50 of the world if he can absolutely smash this week and next. So, yeah, I think 19th in the race to Dubai as well. He can do some damage with a couple of good weeks, I think. For me, I mean, the reason I had him shortlisted is there's loads of correlation between him and last year's winner, Antoine Rosner, in terms of stats. He's right up there for driving distance. He's right up there for bogey avoidance and scrambling, which if you're going to keep your foot to the floor this week, you've got to be making sure you do save those pars at the odd chance or the odd time that you're not looking at birdie. He won the Tenerife Open at 25 under, which is exactly the target score that we're looking for. That was a little earlier this year. That was on Bermuda greens as well. So he should be right at home here. And I say, in terms of his desert form, third at the Dubai Desert Classic, fourth twice next door at the Earth Course. For me, this should be right up his alley, Dean Burmester. So yeah, those two were really quite straightforward for me. I also added Victor Perez at 40-1. I took the extra places with Perez. I could have taken 45s, but the words of Barry have been ringing in my ears for weeks and months now, so I've relented there. And still some 45 out there if you do fancy shorter each-way places, but it's pick your poison, effectively. And Victor Perez, yeah, perhaps now that the Ryder Cup's well and truly in the rearview mirror, we'll see a return to form for the Frenchman. He was in great form. He was in a great spot, actually, wasn't he, for the Ryder Cup after winning the Dunhill Links. Back at the start of the qualifying period, he was runner-up in Turkey, runner-up in Abu Dhabi. All of this before lockdown, and then the rules changed, the world changed, and it didn't quite go to plan. Even so, though, he finished second at Wentworth, seventh at the Earth Course next door last December, fourth in Saudi. Went over to the US. He was ninth at the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass. He got through to the semi-finals of the WGC match play. I mean, he looked like the real deal at the time. He was up to world best in the world rankings, really strong. And then just ran out of steam. Was it the lure or the... You know, the Ryder Cup in the distance that that put him off, or was it ultimately just didn't have the didn't have the game to continue playing at that kind of level for so long? But yeah, the summer was a write-off for him, really. Interesting then that he finished eighth last week after maybe finally regrouping and getting his head around everything. The putter returned last week. He was second for strokes gained. Putting, and that's really positive last week for a player who, like Victor Perez, who can be so good from tee to green. And eighth on his debut at Villamora, I think he can build on that and potentially go and do well this week. So, yeah, taking a chance on Victor Perez. I've also taken a chance on Mike Lorenzo Vera at 125-1. Slightly different rationale, very different rationale with Mike Lorenzo Vera because he's had an awful year. He's 148th in the race to Dubai. No win of any description to fall back on. So he needs a big week here. If he's going to get full playing privilege, as I've said, there's this safety net. So it remains to be seen exactly how many starts he'll get should he finish in a similar position. But for all of these guys outside the 1-2-2, the closer they can get, I'm sure when it's all re-ranked, the better they'll end up being. So needs must for players in that kind of position. As I say, it's been a poor season for the Frenchman. There have been a few signs of life lately. 17th at the Spanish Open, four rounds of 60s. That's the first time, or only time, that he's shot four rounds in the 60s this year. He was 25th at Valderrama, where the putter really started working again. And the putter's key for Mike Lorenzo Vera. Go back to those stats I read through earlier. He led the field here for strokes gained putting last year when finishing second. And if the putter's starting to warm up for him, then he can do some damage on a course where your performance on the greens could ultimately be the difference between success or failure or second or seventh or whatever. I think he can go well. I mean, the real key to this bet, though, is that he loves playing desert golf. Three top tens in Qatar from his last four starts. Eighth at the Dubai Desert Classic last year. Third at the Earth Course the December before or November before. Second here at the Fire Course last year as well, as I've just mentioned. He loves playing this kind of this kind of setup, this kind of course. So I'm taking a chance on Mike Lorenzo Vera. And that completes my preview, or that completes the four that I've bagged. Mike Lorenzo Vera, Victor Perez, Dean Burmester and Minwoo Lee at the top of the shop. Anyone catch your eye this week, Barry? I know you've been a bit off the European tour. Your love affair with the European tour seems to have been taking a bit of a knock in the last few weeks. But anyone there catch your eye?
Yeah, it's, I don't know, burnout, I guess, at this stage of the season. I've put a little bet on Minwoo Lee. Big fan of Michael Lorenzo Vera, so I've had a little bet on him as well for all the reasons you listed. I don't know why Lagergren withdrew last week.
No, I didn't find a definitive reason either. Perhaps it was just something.
Maybe he was just taking the week off and getting over to Dubai in advance and kind of just settling in there and getting a bit of work on the game. I hope that's the reason. So I've stuck with it. Got him at 66-1 with the maximum number of places in Boyles, 8. Yeah, and then the other one I've backed is Francesco Laporta.
Yeah, now he was last off my list, so you may have done the right thing there. He's form.
He was right in the mix at Wentworth, wasn't he, last month?
Yeah, he's been playing some good stuff. Yeah, he was seventh last week. He was second here last December. So there's quite a lot. There's an awful lot to like.
Is it my imagination? Do a lot of the Italians spend lots of time in Dubai?
Yeah.
And use it as like a winter base, don't they? Or tax haven, one or other. But they spend a lot of time out there, don't they, the Italians?
Yeah, there's quite a few of the players generally who spend some time out there, the training facilities as well. But yes, there's also a case for that he can back a top 10 up with another because he's done it a couple of times in relatively recent times as well. So
yeah, he went from fourth in the Italian Open to tied sixth in the Wentworth.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
back to back weeks, and he his last victory was the Challenge Tour grand final 2 years ago, but that's this time of year, so there's a little biorhythm angle in there as well. Played well last week, good here last year, and I thought the odds, I got him at 50, I was able to boost him to 55-1, so I thought that was reasonably appealing.
Yeah, no, I couldn't put you or anyone off backing him if you fancy him. It's there's a strong case there. So, and he's going to be a popular boy. He's got that classic combination of current and course form, and it sticks out like a sore thumb, doesn't it? So, good luck with that, Barry. Good luck. Any from you, Steve?
Just to add some meat on the bones to Minwoo Lee, it's worth mentioning that, of course, there isn't going to be any Australian action again this year. So for someone like Minwoo Lee, who's 56th in the world, he's got this week and next week to try and get into that top 50, to get that Masters invite on his doormat before Christmas.
Well, 56th, it's right there, isn't it?
It's right in front of him. He's got in front of him Talal Gooch, Harman Poulter, Higo, Eric van Ruin. Mackenzie Hughes right now is on the cusp at 50th. And Ortiz, who we were mentioning a few minutes ago, is 49th. So, yeah, it's there in front of him. I do like the Bermesta shout, and I also love that Laporta shout. So, yeah, I think my portfolio will be Minwoo Lee, Bermesta and Laporta. That Laporta, that feels very Antoine Rosner-like from last year. Just that consistency and percolating. Has Laporta ever won on the European Tour?
No, he's got the win that Barry was talking about was back on the Challenge Tour.
So, the Challenge. Yeah. So again, he'll be motivated, won't he? Knows he's playing well, close to a first ever European Tour victory. Yeah, I can see that. Can definitely see that. So those are the three I'm going for. Right. Similar events, really, on the basis this is only the second renewal of the Houston Open. They're playing it at Memorial Park, of course, so we'll have only seen this course once. It was, as per ever with the PGA Tour, you don't know what they're going to do in terms of course setup, but you kind of think that they might go down the road of getting the Houston Fire Brigade out and making those greens that were releasing last year a little bit softer, a little bit more receptive. I hope they don't do that. They The other thing is, 2019, they played the Houston Open at the Golf Club of Houston, again in October, November time. And the greens and the conditions that week were pretty firm and fast as well. Because I'm thinking, don't forget, last year they played this the week before the November Masters. And you can kind of imagine the conversations, can't you? Oh, we want to get the players warmed up, like the Dustin Johnsons and the Brooks Koepkas. We want to give them conditions that kind of marry up to what they're going to see at Augusta next week. So we're going to let the conditions firm up a little bit. The really weird thing was that the conditions were firmer here than they actually were at Augusta when they got there the week after. But we won't go down that route. But I'm wondering, because the score here, I mean, let me put it this way. The cut line, bearing in mind this is a PGA Tour event, the cut line last year was 3 over. Now, that is not very PGA Tour, is it? The cut line, yes, I think the cut line last week at Mayakoba, this is far more PGA Tour, was 4 under. So you had a situation where last week at Mayakoba, the cut line was 4 under. The cut line this event last year was 3 over, because that's how difficult the course played. So I tried to get in my mind, it's, you know, without talking to a PGA Tour official, you'll never get your head around it. Is the course this year going to play as tough as it did last year? Memorial Park Golf Course. It's a 7,412-yard par 70. So straight away, my tingly senses are saying that's a 7,400-yard par 70. That's kind of the numbers you get at like a major championship in terms of length. So maybe we are going to see another stretching renewal simply because this golf course is so damn long. Carlos Ortiz won this last year at 13 under. And as I say, it's just not PGA Tour-like, is it? You know, yesterday we saw Victor Hovland win at 23 under, not 13 under. So, you know, when you get these events that aren't a typically PGA Tour birdie fests, you just wonder, are the conditions going to stay the same this year? But I think this golf course is pretty damn trippy. So I think it's going to be a stretching affair again. Other things to note, it's a golf course that's kind of parkland. Holes with water hazards 4. The fairways are Bermuda grass. The rough is Bermuda grass. One thing I did note, they've actually taken 1/4 of an inch off the rough year on year. So it's going to be 2.25 inches this year as opposed to 2.5 last year. But the secret really of this golf course last year was the greens themselves, 7,000 square feet, so pretty chunky. But A, they feature mini Verde Bermuda grass. That's a Bermuda grass you don't see very often on the PGA Tour, a mini Verde. And secondly, the stint meter last year was 12 to 12.5. So straight away, the greens were releasing. And as we know, you know, people that watch golf all every day, every week of the year, as soon as you get greens that are releasing, the scoring becomes far higher. It actually ranked as 8th of 51 courses for difficulty on the PGA Tour last year. And I think from my preview, which of course is available at Golf Betting System, I think it played as the 3rd toughest non-major tournament of the 5th toughest non-major course of 2020-21 season. And I just think, you know, par 77,400 yards plus. I don't think this is going to be a birdie fest this week. I just can't see how it can be, really. Unless they've literally deposited tons and tons and tons of water over the whole course. Which they might have done, because it's the PGA Tour. Just from that ultra dwarf Bermuda grass or mini Verde ultra dwarf perspective, other current PGA Tour stop-offs with mini Verde include TPC Louisiana, where they play the Zurich Classic of New Orleans team event. East Lake, where they play the Tour Championship. Plus, the Old Houston Open. That was played at the Golf Club of Houston. I actually know that as Redstone for people that have been in the game for a long time. It was Redstone Country Club, wasn't it? Or Golf Club. That also featured mini Verde, but That was back in April, and back then they were actually overseeded green, so it's not a direct correlation. I'm doing my agronomy specialism here. Oh, the other, also a couple of courses when you go back in time that featured Miniverdi. TPC Sawgrass, where they used to play the Players' Championship every year, that featured Miniverdi prior to 2017. And Quail Hollow had a period, 2014 through 2016, where they had Miniverdi greens. Just so happens that James Harm won one of those, but I haven't tipped him out this week, James Harm. But yes, Miniverdi greens also for a 3-year stretch at Quail Hollow, 14 through 16, and anything prior to 2017 around TPC Sawgrass. That's interesting, really. I need to come up with another word that isn't interesting. I remember Jason Day did well in this tournament last year, and of course Jason Day is a TPC Sawgrass winner on those old Miniverdi greens, as was. So there's some ins if you want to have a look at tournaments that featured the same kind of grass structure on the greens. The other thing about this course, though, the greens are large, but they're pronounced. They have runoff areas all around them. And that was causing utter mayhem last year because a lot of approach shots, you know, PGA Tour pros, they like aiming at pins, don't they? They don't go for 15 feet to the centre of the green. They go straight for pins. And what was happening is pins tucked away, going for pins. They were missing their landing area by 5-6 feet. And all of a sudden, they're rolling off the greens into these chipping areas that were difficult to then control the chip or the putt back. And that's what kept the scoring so high, because the greens are releasing and they are extremely contoured. So, yeah, there's a few, just a few notes, really. Now, we've only had one renewal here, as we know. And Carlos Ortiz was the victor. I think he had local ties, didn't he, Ortiz? The crowd were kind of cheering him as if he was a hometown boy. Whether it was he lives here or whether it's the fact he went to uni here, there was something like that going on. But just from a strokes gain perspective, he was 31st for off the tee. He struggled to actually hit fairways. I think he only hit 50% of fairways, which does suggest that hitting fairways isn't really a prerequisite. He was 14th for approach, and this is really weird. He was 2nd for strokes gained around the green. So he was playing Seve-esque around the greens. I expect there were a few chip-ins and the like. So actually, it was a weird strokes gained tee to green number of 5th, where actually it was around the green as opposed to off the tee or approach that was generating the biggest number. 5th for a tee to green, he was also 5th for strokes gained putting. So his short game was on fire to win this 12 months ago. That, of course, is one renewal, and it doesn't mean the same will happen again. So I had a dig into why did Carlos Ortiz win this last year at 160-1? Well, it wasn't really blindingly obvious form in that he won it. He was 35th at the Zozo. He was 48th at the CJ Cup. He'd missed the cut at the Shriners and Sanderson Arms. Sounds like a pub. Sanderson Farms Championship. So he was playing okay. He was getting better, but he wasn't exactly red hot on form. I just went and looked at the numbers that he was ranking on the PGA Tour prior to arriving here. He was in the top 35 for ball striking. He was 55th for total drive. He was also, top 55 for greens in reg, and he was also in the top 80 for driving distance or drives. So he was banging it off the tee. And actually, you look at who he was up against in the top of the leaderboard. It was Ortiz, it was Hideki Matsuyama, it was Dustin Johnson. Sam Burns and Jason Day actually went out in the last group with Carlos Ortiz. And in the group prior to that, Seb Straka, Dustin Johnson, and our friend Aaron Wise, who keeps percolating at the moment. They're all bombers to me. They're all players that have got plenty of pop off the tee. And that's kind of where I'm at. I'm going for four players this week who, for me, have the adequate ability to give it plenty. And 7,400-yard pass 70, I think you'd need a bit of pop, personally. That's the way I'm looking at it. Dustin Johnson, Talor Gooch, Seb Straka, all our top four finishes at the Golf Club of Houston, where they used to play this, as did Ortiz, I believe. So there's, even though it's a different golf course, there seems to be a correlation between the old Houston Open host course and this Houston Open course. And the other thing that was interesting with Ortiz and Matsuyama, if you actually looked at the season prior, so it would this is where it gets complicated, isn't it? If you'd looked at the full season prior to this, so that would have ended at the Tour Championship in September prior to this bit of the full series in 2020, Ortiz was top 30 for scrambling on the PGA Tour, and Matsuyama was top 20 for scrambling the season before. So if you can get a player that's actually long off the tee, having a decent run with their irons, and when they miss greens, because if they're going to be firm, fast and releasing again, you're going to have to be able to scramble, can actually have a scrambling game, I don't think you're going to be far wrong.
You're not.
That's the angle.
You're not looking for much, are you?
No. Well, I'm not. And then and this is it. I mean, Dustin Johnson and Matsuyama were a shot back of Ortiz last year. It kind of suggests that a bit of cream comes to the top on a golf course like this.
Yeah.
This is a point as well. And again, I could be completely wrong. All of a sudden, it could be 19 under wins this week because they've been out with the hoses and they've made it as soft as compliant as possible, and it's your usual PGA Tour event. Hopefully, they haven't. But I actually think this is a course that will suit players that have a major championship caliber game.
And
which is interesting when you look at this, just when you look at the betting heat, because we've got Sam Burns as a 16-1 favourite.
Yeah. And you know what? It would actually serve this tournament well to gain an identity by being a little bit more of a test.
Yeah.
I know it's not an amazing time of year for that to be a thing, but there are also, there are player types on the tour that actually go better in the more testing conditions or the more challenging course setups and a different scoring profile to the event.
Don't forget, this course is funded and this tournament is funded by the Astros owner, Jim Crane.
Mm.
So maybe he says, well, actually, I want my tournament to be a test, my course to be a test. Let's hope he does. And I'm sure that if the guy that's pumping all the money in says that he wants an actual testing golf course, not dissimilar to Jack Nicklaus at the Memorial, isn't it? Jack Nicklaus doesn't want Muirfield Village to be a 33-under birdie fest. He says, no, it's going to be a test. It's going to be thick, rough, releasing greens. Get on with it. There'll be some players that moan. They can miss the cut, and actually we get a decent winner. So maybe Jim Crane's in the same boat. He wants his tournament to be to actually have its own identity. And you've got to say, it's actually attracted a decent field, isn't it? Burns, Scheffler, Sung Jae-in, the Wolfman, Smith, Finau's playing it, Hatton, Koepka, who actually had some work in the... It's a Doak renovation, but Koepka was a player consultant. Joaquin's playing, Scott, Gooch. It's a good field, Wise, Carlos Ortiz, and Patrick Reed. So... Mark Leishman, also a perennial major contender and a winner on difficult golf courses like Torrey Pines. So, yeah, hopefully it continues in that vein. I've gone for four, and one of them isn't Russell Henley, you'll be glad to hear. So, lump on Henley this week. I've gone down the Australian route. I've gone for Cam Smith. 2 points each way, 25-1 with Paddy Power, 8 places each way. Smith, he is a two-time... he's actually won on the PGA Tour three times. I've put in my preview, he's a two... Anyway, I'll have a look at that. He's won twice at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans in that team event. All of his professional wins have been on Bermuda grass greens. And all of his professional wins have been preceded by a top 10 finish the outing before. I just thought to myself, and we know with Smith, he's a typical Australian. He does have a habit of winning in what you would classify as the Australian spring, i.e. the American fall. Leishman's the same, isn't he? You mentioned to me off mic, Paul, that Leishman has won the CIMB Classic and the Nedbank in the fall set or the autumn section of the calendar. And we know with Smith, I landed on Smith at the Masters last November for very much the same reason. He just seems to peak from October through November.
Yeah, he sometimes get these. You know, we talk about Byrons quite a lot, don't we? But as you say, sometimes the Australians are peaking, particularly for their big events that they would ordinarily have in December back at home. Which they're not having. Yeah, sadly not happening. But that may put the emphasis on players having to, you know, focus on these weeks beforehand. Like the events over in Dubai and, of course, the one that you're covering this week.
18th for ball striking, 48th for driving accuracy. He's first for greens in regulation so far in this embryonic section of the tour. But top 30 for scrambling both this season and last season. So I think Cam Smith, he's also got enough pop. Last year on the PGA Tour, he was in the top 60 driving distance all drives. So he doesn't mind getting the driver out. I think he's going to like this golf course. He's never played it before. But just that ability to be able to scramble when you're missing greens. And of course, Smith is a fantastic putter. And as I said, all of his wins have been on Bermuda grass, including the Sony Open in 2020. I am a believer in biorhythms, Barry. So there you go. I've actually put that in my copy this week. I'm like you. In fact, you might have even sold me on this biorhythms thing. So there we go.
Well, you sold me on it.
Me?
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, I sold it to you, did
yeah,
I?
Yeah, maybe we okay. both fed. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we both fed each other. That's joint credit, tied first.
Here you go. This is an interesting one as well. I remember Morikawa, Victor Hovland, and Matthew Wolff all hitting the PGA Tour at the same time in the summer of 2019. And this is a crazy... When you read this out, it's pretty damn mad. Morikawa now sits as the world number two with a couple of major victories amidst five PGA Tour victories total. Whilst Victor Hovland won his third PGA Tour title last week in Mexico, which took the Norwegian into the world's top time for the first time ever. Now, there's a group of players right there. And you look at Matthew Wolff and you think, I mean, in any other kind of time, and this just shows you how quality players mature so quickly these days on the PGA Tour, he's now sitting 31st in the world and actually has only won once on the PGA Tour. And in comparison to Hovland and in comparison to Morikawa, who he was competing with and beating regularly as an amateur, he's now actually in third place behind those two contemporaries. But you have to say, Wolff is playing some outstanding stuff right now. 17th at the Sanderson Farm, 2nd at the Shriners when we were on, 5th last week at Mayakoba. And that Mayakoba golf course was not a Matthew Wolff golf course by any way, shapes or forms. Plotters golf course, high accuracy, off the tee required. That isn't Wolff's game. And for him to start so quickly, be the 36-hole leader, can't, you know, lose the plot on Saturday, but then come back with a fine closing round again on Sunday to lock in a top five finish at Mayakoba. I thought on a golf course that didn't suit him, I think that was quite a mature performance from Wolff. Again, on a golf course where power off the tee and a major championship style of game is required, I think Wolff's game is in great shape this week. Don't forget, we talk about Morikawa, we talk about Hovland. From a major championship perspective, Wolff has performed far better than Victor because he's had a second place finish at the PGA Championship and the US Open in 2020. And even this year, amidst all of these, you know, confidence issues and mental demons that he's been dealing with, He was actually third after 36 holes and sixth after 54 holes at round Torrey Pines South in US Open conditions. So if this is difficult releasing a tough golf course, I think Wolf doesn't necessarily fall. He's not a birdie fest specialist. He can play major championship golf as well as anyone in this field, potentially. So I've gone at the top, 225-1 chances, 2 points each way on both. Both with Paddy Power, Cam Smith and Matthew Wolf. Are there anyone in this kind of sub 50-1 area that you two fancy this week?
Right, yeah, for me, I've only backed one, and that is a guy that you've mentioned a couple of times, and that's Patrick Reed. And I think for a course that does threaten to be tough, and a course where maybe there'll only be a handful of players who get to double digits under par, if last year's anything to go by, then that's right in his wheelhouse. And what was his second back at the Bermuda a couple of weeks ago? Should have missed the cut last week, had an awful first round, and then came back through with a flying second round of 65, I think it was, to make the cut last week. Didn't do anything from there, but you can't really expect that. From the position he was in, he was absolute miles off the lead and would have needed something dramatic to even get close. So this is much more his game, I think. Decent in the wind, if there's a bit of wind this week, decent on Bermuda greens, a couple of top 20 finishes as well. At the old Houston course that used to be used prior to this one. So it's right. It's his price point, isn't it? We've talked about Patrick Reed's price point in the past and 40-1. I couldn't say no. Just couldn't say no.
In terms of weather, I must say it looks a little bit strange. It's going to be cold in the mornings and windy in the morning. So I think what you're going to see is AM, the better scores first round leader, PM, on Thursday, and then it reverses on the Friday, where the tricky conditions will be morning, cold, then the wind dies down and it gets warmer in the afternoons. So I think it will level out across 36 holes. But first round leader, looking at the forecast, I'd be on afternoon starters personally. Right, two more. I know time's ticking away. Jason Kokrag, 50-1. You just look at his resume, tough golf courses, plays well on them. I watched him very, very closely at the CJ Cup. He was grouped in a featured group because he was the defending champion. Bearing in mind, it was either Zozo or the CJ Cup. No, it was the CJ Cup, the one that they played at the Summit Club. He was grouped, defending champion, defending his first ever PGA Tour win. He was grouped with Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy. And what does he do? He absolutely craps the bed. Shoots a 77 in round one, 5 over par, and is last on the leaderboard. I think it was 17 shots back of Robert Streber, who was the first round leader. He absolutely had one of those moments where he's like, whoa, game falls apart. He was 16 shots worse than Robert Streber. I'm not really interested in that. I'm more interested in what he did after that. He then shot 66, 65, 68. And for those final three rounds, he was 17 under par, which actually, when you look at the tournament as a whole, was only just behind Colin Morikawa and the tournament winner, Rory McIlroy. He shot 199 shots, which was level with Scott Anser, one back of Griot. Morikawa was 197 and McIlroy 195. So actually, Kokrag is in decent nick. That's what that tells me. Over the last three rounds, he was only four back of Rory McIlroy, who was on fire. So I've gone for Kokrag at 50-1, who I think this course will suit no end. I've also gone for a longer price, Keith Mitchell. We know that Mitchell can grind. We know that Mitchell is better on Bermuda grass greens. And a couple of tournaments ago, the CJ Cup, he finished in third spot. He's actually had a good year, Mitchell. And you just look at his record, PGA National, the winner there. He's had two top five finishes at Bay Hill. These are long, stretching, difficult golf courses. Yeah. He also has had third this year and eighth at Quail Hollow. So, yeah, I think he can roll the rock on Bermuda grass. I think he's decent on stretching more tricky tests. And 125-1 I got with William Hill, eight places each way on Keith Mitchell. So those are my four. Mitchell, Kokrag, Cam Smith and Matthew Wolfe. What about you, Baron?
I've backed Seamus Power again. The guy's playing great. Can't argue with it.
No.
So, yeah. Not much more to say about that.
No.
Off we go to the next.
Solid.
Yeah. And just dipping around a bit and can't avoid him. The odds are really, really long for him. And we're talking about a major championship course. This guy's a major champion. Showed some good form in Europe before a bit of a break. Had a miscut last week, but wasn't terrible. Showed some birdies and performs well on Bermuda grass. So I've taken Henrik Stenson at 150-1, 8 places.
That mini birdie link. Great record at the Players, didn't he? Won a Players, didn't he, on mini birdie?
Yeah, and you know, it's decent, a few good results at this particular event, not necessarily mm-hmm. this course. Did miss the cut last year, but you know, for 150-1, I'll take it on.
Francesco Molinari, 200-1 this way. Who'd have thought it? If you'd have said after the Ryder Cup at the Golf National that you'd be getting Francesco Molinari in 2021, latter end, at 200-1 on the PGA Tour, people say you were crazy. Golfer.
You really wonder how that happened. His swing looks so compact and tight and just, like, it just looks like something, it just can't really go that wrong. It's amazing.
He'd been going toe-to-toe with Tiger Woods at Augusta National, of all places, which was completely non-Francesco Molinari golf course. That's how well that guy was playing back then.
It's that 12th hole.
You know, in those glory years.
Can you imagine that butterfly moment if he doesn't punch that ball into the water on 12? I mean, that is a sliding doors moment in his career. From the outside perspective, I mean, he might say completely different, but It's amazing.
I think that's us done then, chaps, unless you've got anything else to add.
No, all good. Best of luck, guys.
Good luck, everybody.
Best of luck to you.
Play well.
Yeah, good luck.
Play well, bet well. I hope your players
mention as a closing remark, actually, 10 places each way, Boyle Sports, on the Houston Open. That's on top of the 8 places each way that we are getting over in Dubai on the European Tour. Of course, we do have that limited offer. Bet 10, get £30 in free bets offer with Boyle Sports available this week and next week. So, as we keep saying, if you want to maximise your each-way places, the additional each-way places, Ball Sports number one in the market right now. Thank you for your time, gentlemen. Hope your bets go well. I hope that your bets go well, listeners, and we will see you again next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more. Cause it's the Golf Betting System. The Golf Betting System is the Golf Betting System.